2018.
This is board time for Wednesday, September 17th, 2014. We just came out of a noticed executive session for 15 minutes from 1:30 to 1:45.
All right.
That was for potential litigation.
The first thing on our agenda is approval of the minutes for August 27th and September 3rd and for September 10th.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the three sets of minutes from August 27, September 3, and September 10.
And I would second that, Mr. Chairman.
We'll move in second. We accept those approval of the minutes.
I have a comment.
Comment.
Just a comment. No corrections to the minutes, but I want to clarify my position. Since the August 27 one about the car allowance, apparently I did not voice an opposition at the time, and I kind of I want to clarify my current position, which wasn't voiced sufficiently back then. I do not support the car allowance anywhere near that. I've got to the point where I just simply support what King County, Thurston County, Watkin County does for a mileage plan instead.
Well, that's on our agenda. We'll bring that up when we get done then.
Yep, but the reason I bring that up now is because I'm counted as in favor of that on the August 27th, and I am not in favor of that. I just kind of just didn't voice my opposition at the time. I got counted as a yes vote, and that is not quite correct.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Vehicle allowance. You had something
speaking
there.
Speaking of.
Go ahead. what do they do up there?
Here they are. Yeah, here we go. Peter, you want to explain what you've done here?
I think it's pretty obvious. There are four counties plus Clark County that have a stated vehicle allowance for their county commissioners. The other larger counties that I looked into or contacted actually had a vehicle mileage reimbursement policy for the commissioners. So that's a little different policy than what we have in place now. And you can see the four quoted rates for the other four counties.
Do any of these have issued vehicles?
I do know that King County and Thurston County have county vehicles available for use, but they did not state.
Yeah, I use for an example, we have fire marshal and sheriff issued vehicles.
Right, and this only dealt with commissioner or council member vehicles. It didn't deal with the county sheriff or other positions.
They have nine councilmen. So I still would like to recognize that we've done away with 50% of it already. And I think that if we don't give a car allowance, that we should be issued a vehicle. Two reasons. One, having been in business and keeping your mileage separate. The record keeping becomes a little bit of a hassle. If you have a car designated for that purpose, then there's no bookwork or paperwork. You have a company vehicle. I want one just like the sheriff's, without the blue lights. Ed, your thoughts?
You know, I voiced my opinion. I thought since I'm going to be leaving the first of the year that I thought that that it's only fair that whoever is the elected county commissioner should have some say in what's going on. I do know that when I used to make trips to Spokane, Wenatchee, Seattle, wherever, the federal mileage allowance is 59 cents a mile. And if you make a trip, round trip from here to Wenatchee, say for a day, go up there for two or three days, and you come back, that's a $650 check for just one trip. So I don't know. The other thing that the mileage, or whatever you want to call it, the allowance that you folks currently get are these allowances. I think a lot of people don't realize that if you buy a new car and you drive it off the lot, there goes $5,000 to $15,000 immediate in depreciation of that automobile. So every year that you hold that automobile, you lose money. So some of this mileage money should be set aside for buying a future car. It also goes for grease job, oil changes, tires, broken windshields, and other things. So from where I come from, that's the reason I thought that it was only appropriate that this is, to me, is a bad discussion to have before you have an election where you're going to have new people come in. And I just have to ask David, in David's case, whether his car is owned by him, whether it's owned by U.S. Digital. Does U.S. Digital give you a gas credit card? Do they, at the end of the year, do you write it off as a cost of doing business for U.S. Digital? Or because you told the public out there you don't collect any gas mileage? Well, if some poor slug gets elected to the county commission that lives up at Warshugel or Hawkinson or someplace like that that has to drive back to Ford's every day, can't afford to absorb those kind of costs. And so it concerns me that this discussion is where it's at right now. And like I expressed my opinion right off the bat that I thought that it should stay at the $700. And there's a whole lot of factors in this. And like I say, I don't know what David does, how he takes care of his stuff since he does it for nothing. But the average citizen cannot do that.
Well, I think that's personal choice, and
I know that.
That would be up to him.
But it's still, it's the average. He's not an average citizen when it comes to income and money and stuff.
He does the old show.
So anyway, but the mileage thing, two or three trips a month, you could be paying the person back, the commissioner back. Like you run you just went to Ellensburg or someplace here just recently?
But no, Ed, we do get reimbursed for that. We get mileage, if we use our car, we get mileage outside of Clark County under our current policy.
See, I didn't know that. So I don't know that, but I still,
you know how many times I see you on the weekend.
Oh, yeah, running all over everywhere. So at 59 cents a mile, it don't take long for that to back up. But again, I think that me personally, I would just as soon stay at the $1,500 until you get a new commissioner on board, and then you folks can do. You have till what, 2016, for the wages and all.
We could probably kick this down the road, but that's when we were in such a rush to get you appointed.
Yeah, so that's my personal opinion, Mr. Chairman.
So that you would have an opinion, and your party would be represented.
Right, that's my
And you're throwing that out the window.
That's my personal opinion, and you're not talking about Pierce County, $670. You're talking about $130 a month difference, $200 for Spokane. About the same for Snohomish County. Kitsap County is a smaller county. They probably don't run around as much. I don't know. King County is probably, Seattle is probably a lot more than that with the mileage and Thurston around. So, but that's my views.
Okay. Well, let me address some of the points that you brought up. I don't turn in any expense report at all to U.S. Digital or to the county. I don't intend to. I do not get anything for my mileage or my car. U.S. Digital does not own my car. I own it personally and pay for it, everything personal. So there's nothing there. When it comes to timing, I think the best timing to make decisions that are highly visible is just before an election, because people then can get to know the values and the decisions that are relevant to the community. They can factor that in and say, well, I like that or I don't like that. So that's part of welcoming scrutiny and accountability. When it comes to the cost that may be to travel from here to a long distance and back, I would assume as we each lead by example, that we will naturally choose the most practical means that is at our disposal. Because it would surely not be a good idea for us to be able to charge $690 to drive to and from Wenatchee. I would think that unless that's the only choice we have, the you could fly maybe cheaper, or you could use a county car if it's available, whatever the practical choice would be. Or you could just simply make the trip and say, oh, I'll cover it. When it comes to the means for covering the cost of a vehicle, yes, we drive all over the place. And the that's one reason why we get why this position is paid over $100,000 a year, because we have expenses and we have it's just part of doing the job. And so I think the position already pays sufficiently for us to be able to cover those costs. And if there be an extra cost that you want to turn in an expense report on a mileage basis, then we have the means to do so like any other employee here at the county. One of the important things in leadership is that we would not ask, we would not do what we wouldn't ask our staff to do. If staff wants to make a trip here, they have a means to make the trip and turn in expense report if they want to. We don't expect our staff to have all of this, so much of the staff to have a certain amount added because they have to drive also. So there is a means to compensate for them, pay for that. And if we want to be able to send the right message, then leadership should lead by example and do what we encourage others to do. So that's why I'm in favor of doing away with the vehicle allowance altogether for the three commissioners and providing the alternate means. If you want to be able to turn in mileage, then you would just simply get paid at the IRS rate. If you want to be able to find another more practical means to be able to get to a long trip and back, then that is at our disposal.
I wouldn't even want to ask my employees to pay their own way when they were going to represent the county. That's what we do. We have froze this allowance several times. We have completely removed mileage from within the county, and we have other options to do. We can fly. What it is, I think it's a simple way to reimburse us for an average, maybe, of what we spend out of our personal pocket. So I know we looked at that before, and we were talking about it here. It was to leave it the way it is and freeze it for 2 years and come back and address it in 2 years. And that's kind of where I am on the issue.
Okay.
And, you know, everybody has a personal choice, but I wouldn't ask the employees of the county to travel on their dime, and I don't think that they would be asking me to travel on my dime either.
Well, we're not really asking them to travel on their dime. We have a reimbursement policy that's based on IRS formula for miles, and that is what I'm suggesting here, the same thing.
Well, if we did that, it would be far in excess of $700, I can guarantee you. Not that I would cheat or pad my mileage. I'm just telling you how many miles I travel. So,
commissioners, before you, what we had is we had patterned this chart or grid up with the salary chart, which went to 2020. Now, the real one I think that does need to be decided before the election is the position three, because there's nothing set for 15 to 18. But we had decided to go ahead and make the decision salary-wise from 15 all the way out to 20. So that's what it shows right now. Would show it the one you have in front of you that we handed out today shows 700 through 20.
I have a question. It is not legal for city commissioners to adjust their own salary. Do we have the freedom? Do commissioners have the freedom to adjust their car allowance while they're in office?
I think it is legal. We can set our salary. Lots of people set their salaries. Some people choose to have a salary commission.
The way I understand it, Chris could help her, but when we researched it for this, is a commissioner in their sitting term cannot adjust the salary. It has to be set for the next term.
Right.
Given the chart that you have there, it would only adjust things moving forward for 2015 for the position. It would set the position three's salary and car allowance. It would not in any way alter what your two positions are to make until after the next election.
Two different things. There's the salary, which we've already agreed upon, and there's the car allowance. And the question is, Chris, is the car allowance, is it treated like the salary that you don't touch it while you're in office for your term, or you have the freedom to, if we wanted to say this is, we're going to adopt a mileage base system or a lower base system for us for all of the positions, we can have that freedom?
Well, I will tell you that Article 11, Section 8 of the Constitution only speaks to the salary. If a car allowance is only a reimbursement for money that's expended, it's not income. To the extent that you're getting this allowance for anticipated expenditures in lieu of it, I'll be honest. I mean, as I walked up, I didn't anticipate the question coming, and so I didn't look at the Constitution to see how this would be checked. I don't know how HR or how the auditor's office treats it. I know lots of people who have mileage expenses and they're not treated as income for that purpose. So touching only on the issue of salary, you can't change your salary during this term. You can affect salaries next term, and if you happen to occupy that position, then you get the benefit of it. But the idea is that you should never be able to immediately increase your own salary as long as there's a break that requires an election. Then you're treated the same as any other person occupying that position. So that in that sense, you're fine if you're increasing salary for next year or for the next term. If this allowance, because we don't have a guaranteed minimum number of miles, and by the way, the Commissioner Madore, even if his company did provide him a vehicle, could not double dip. One would have to be treated as income. If it wasn't purely a reimbursement for his expenditures, he would actually have to declare that as income. For the allowance, I don't know the answer because what you have is this unknown. Commissioner Mielke, you spoke about if we went to a straight mileage that you'd get billed more. Well, in 1 month you may get billed more, and there may be a number of months that you're less than $700. And that's where this allowance causes me some concern because I don't know the answer, and I'm glad to give it to you and spend a little time. I just didn't come up here. I didn't come up here knowing this was going to come up. So I can't tell you from the limited case. Now, I can take a look while we're talking, and if I find something, I'll jump back in. But right now, I don't have the exact answer about how a county allowance is treated under the IRS rules and whether or not it would qualify as salary for the purposes of the constitutional prohibition. The easy answer would be, if you do it effective for the next term, you don't have to worry because no matter whether it's salary or not, you're covered. If you want to be a little more adventurous and affect it for next year, then you need to know the answer.
Well, I think it's something that we could change at any time. Ed, you have something?
Yeah. You know, as somebody that managed a whole lot of employees for the electrical workers, the building trades for a whole lot of years, the mileage situation, what it comes down to is a bookkeeping nightmare because the minute I leave the house, I have to have a mileage slip where I fill out off the speedometer that I have 120,212 miles. At the end of the day, if you do it, then when you go back home, you put down whatever that mileage is, you total that up. So at the end of the month or the end of the week or however how you do it, you have to turn that into the county here. So somebody in the bookkeeping department or the payroll department would have to go do all this extra bookkeeping and spend all that extra time in order to calculate whether, and then people would be checking to see whether David Madore, Tom Mielke, or Ed Barnes were actually fudging on the mileage. So you'd have all these mileage slips that you'd be turning in weekly or daily or whatever that would come into the bookkeeper. She would have to spend the time, or the county would have to spend the time storing all this stuff, putting it on record, so if somebody wanted to make a request for the documentation of this, then you'd have Lene out there searching the thing so that they could turn all these records over. It's a cleaner, much cleaner when you just get a flat amount of money rather than go through all this bookwork and half the worker has to keep track, whether it's a commissioner, whether it's an employee that has to do that, but for a whole lot of years, 35 of them, I kept track of that. First off, we used to let the person use their personal car. We got in all kinds of hot water people saying, well, I seen the guy at a tavern, I seen him so-and-so places charging mileage against the car. Then we went and started leasing cars. We got screwed with a leasing company. So then I started buying cars through Hertz for the employees of that, and the local give them a credit card. So when the credit card bill come back at the end of the month, we know just exactly on there how much the guy was charging for gas money. So there's a lot of different ways to do it, but the bookkeeping nightmare when you start asking somebody to start writing down every day on a chart how many miles, or if I went from here to Camas, and then I come back from Camas to Battleground, or whether I come back here, I'd have to put that mileage down again. You keep putting all these mileage things down. At the end of the day, you might have 10 different entries of 10 different places you went. And I think for the county, I think it'd be a bookkeeping nightmare to do that, David. So I think the flat rate, but I think that the $700 should be taken care of by Jeannie Stewart or Craig Pridemore, or whoever gets in here when they end up here. So.
Well, we're never going to let Pridemore do it. He'd probably want more. Okay, so I think it sounds like we're going to leave it the way it is.
Well, my opinion, which is not a legal opinion, but I think the way it comes through, and because it's an allowance, it probably would qualify as a portion of the salary. And just to remind you that if that was the case, and Chris can answer that question once we research it, but if that is the case, you couldn't adjust it up or down for the sitting terms of position 1 or 2, which are already set to go to 700 for 15 and 16. Already. So next year, 15 and 16 is set to go to the 7. We just don't have the position 3 set yet.
And that's where it's important that, Chris, you inform us.
I'm working right now.
Can we adjust it?
So I want to make sure.
The most conservative approach, as I said, would be to go out to the next term. If you're going to increase it or change it, move it out to the next, outside your terms. If you're going, and if you do that, regardless of whether you increase or decrease, it can't violate the Constitution. If you're going to do it next year, so it's during the term, your terms of office, then you need an answer. I need to give you an answer. And like I say, I'm looking as we speak right now.
So, Axel, from what you said, I would like to find out if HR or payroll is counting this as income, because it's not income. It's a reimbursement.
Okay.
I think I'm sure they recognize it as a car allowance being that old.
And I'll tell you the other argument. This all gets a little bit interesting, because truly, if it's a benefit, I mean, you have health benefits and those are not taxable and they're not treated as part of your salary. And there are rules about when it becomes part of your salary. If they're available to all your employees, then they're a benefit. And there are certain things that supervisors or managers are entitled to, but there are all this. That's why I say this gets a little bit complicated. If it's truly a benefit, it's not taxable, and if a salary allowance is treated as just a benefit, then again, there's another answer or another issue that we have to research. But if it's treated like a health benefit, then it isn't salary, and you can change it. If because of the fact it's only available to M1s and commissioners, then that may present a slightly different issue, and that's what I think the rule is for the salary allowance. It's really a pretty limited pool of people that for whom that's available. It's Mark and you and the other elected officials, and really that may be all.
The question is, between now and the time we actually have to vote on this, do we have the freedom to make them all the same? In other words, if we wanted to just simply make the commissioners, let's say, as an example, the same as all the others, all the others that have this kind of a program are at $400 a month. Do we have the freedom for the commissioners to say, well, we'll be at $400 a month and we'll go there as soon as possible, so equity, it's the same for all three commissioners, or are we locked?
Well, and that'll be, and that hinges on timing first, if you're going to, when you want to do it. The answer ultimately is, of course, the board can raise or lower its own mileage allowance or sell, or mileage allowance or mileage fee. The question is, when do you want to do it? If you want, as soon as possible, presumes you mean maybe next year, and that requires the answer. If you want to do it outside that term, we already talked about that.
Yeah,
clearly,
so
you
if,
can do that.
So let's say an applicable time would be the beginning of 2015 when the new person would take office.
And I will, if I give you an answer right now, I'll
do a lower number.
Okay.
It's open any time. We could change this anytime. This isn't the same as our contract. When we get elected, we're a 4-year contract. That's the reason we can't change it in that 4 years. Any change that we make with our salary is volunteer. We can't. It's a contract.
Well, I get that when it comes to salary, but Chris is
the car
not certain
is a
about the car allowance.
And we could change that next week if you got a second vote.
Well, that's where Chris needs to inform us about the constitutionality and the legality of it.
And I'm looking.
Okay.
Well, you don't have to answer now, but between now and the time that this comes forward as a agenda item, a hearing.
It doesn't come to the agenda item that I know of.
This has to be.
Has.
Doesn't this go to at least both the salary and the mileage or the auto plan? Doesn't
my
that
knowledge,
come to
our salary
a
never
BOCC
come to
meeting?
The consent agenda.
Or are we making policy right here and now, and that's done with?
My impression is that this will have to come through, especially for the position 3 salary, which it does not have anything slated for next year. Will have to come through as a staff report on the consent agenda.
In other words,
I've never done it before, but that was
never done
it before. Okay, I'll look into it.
Okay. I notice we have our sheriff officer here.
I know. That's why I want to move on.
Yeah, I don't want to delay.
So as it stands today, it's going to remain at $700. We have 2 votes. It says no change.
And that's for the position 3 starting 15 through 18?
Well, right now we're all at $700, I believe, aren't we?
We're all. Your 2 positions are at 6. Commissioner Barnes's position is currently at 7. Next year they'll all be, according to this, if we make the decision going forward for position 3, they'll all be at 7 for 15, 16, 17, all the way to 20.
And
so there would be no change.
We talked about before. Was going to 7 and then freezing it.
And
so it'd have to come back, and it could be come back any time. So.
Just for the record, when the minutes show, I wanted to show that I'm a no vote on that, and my preference would be whatever is going to be best implementable by our staff, because I don't want to have extra overhead, whatever is going to be a practical solution that would either be either a mileage plan like the other employees are already doing here, just simply turning in your miles for those things. They would not pay us to and from work. They would just pay us for the special trips from work to an office and back. Or to match the $400 a month that the rest of them have, which I would prefer the lower cost of the two without creating
what do you
more
get,
overhead.
What do you get, $400?
That's what the other elected officials are receiving, that list of
up there.
But I think while you're doing that, actually, we probably should check in to see what
the
bookkeeping requirements are for bookkeeping by the IRS as far as writing down the mileage from trip to trip to trip to trip and that, and how much that's going to come back to cost payroll here.
We're covering the same thing over. Either we make the decision now to leave it the way it is or bring it back at a later time.
I leaving the way it is.
And that's what I want to do, too.
Well, again, I would like to know.
You can bring it back some other time.
If it's burdensome for the to account for mileage, if it's more trouble than it's worth, I'd like to be able to know.
Well, it would be for us. And it would be if I have to give it to another clerk to process it. And the person writing the check is going to have to write another check.
Well,
there is more work.
Well, that's what I like people to know.
You like to find out whether it's tax deductible or whether it's part of your wages or whatever.
There are apps to do that automatically.
Yes, Mr. Chair, just to make it clear in the record, would you like to take a vote on what's presented in your packet, this grid? Because that leaves it the same, which is what I'm hearing the direction.
I thought we already did that.
I guess we need to do a motion and a vote.
on what's
you're
presented
about
in your
salary
packet.
Grid.
This is no. This is the what's in your packet is the grid that's currently presented, and which you currently have, I think, consensus on with
on
Commissioner allowance. Barnes moving forward on the car allowance.
Yes. Yeah.
And it shows it through 2020.
Okay. You want to vote on? We can vote on.
Can
it.
I share
okay.
you.
I can count to two in my head.
So positions 1 and 2 are already slated to move from 6 to 700 next year and for 16. That was already decided by previous commissioners, not the two of you. What you would be deciding in this matrix is to move the position 3, which is already at 700, already 100 more mm-hmm. in this current year. That would continue at 700 for the next 4 years. And then in the next term for positions 1 and 2, for that 4 years, it would also continue for 700
through 2020. That we talked about previously at board time.
That's right, and that's what we started with today.
And I thought we'd adopted that, but I guess we didn't. So we'll do it today, and I think that's what we're talking about right now. I think all we do to make policy, I need a majority vote. The majority vote chooses to adopt what we have right there.
Yes, and I'll prepare the paperwork that way. I'll work with Chris. If and we do, in fact, have to bring it back on a consent agenda, that's what it would look like.
Okay, and in my opinion, that could be brought back any time. In my humble opinion. What can't be brought back is the wages once the person is elected in the third position. It's a 4-year contract, and we're in our last two. Okay, I'd like to go to Panhandling because Deputy Sergeant here. So
I'll tee this up. We've been working with Sergeant Walker for quite a while and the board on a panhandling ordinance. You'll remember a fine gentleman named Rick Grabner came in and mm-hmm. started talking to us about this for, boy, it's been a while. But long story short, what happened was we prepared an ordinance. We had followed along the lines of Pierce County's ordinance and what they had done, and this was our aim, if you remember, was towards aggressive or coercive panhandling. Mm-hmm. And Sergeant Walker did a ton of work on researching that, outreach to the community, talking to folks, seeing how they felt about it. We got quite a ways along, and the city of Boise, which had almost word-for-word language with Pierce County and with what we were working towards, was sued by the ACLU. There was a lengthy time, you know, while that litigation had to get underway, and there was an order issued by the court which basically threw up into the air much of the coercive or harassing panhandling language that was in their ordinance. So we had to decide what to do. Where we've gone and what we've got now that's in front of you, and I probably should have handed this out, we have, Commissioner Medora, I think, has a copy already. I spoke with him a little bit earlier today. Language very similar to what Pierce County has and what we feel was, Chris can speak to the legality of this, what we feel is maybe left whole in that opinion that was issued from the federal court out of Boise was the part that deals with traffic and panhandling and soliciting in the roadway and around the roadway where it could be dangerous. And I'm going to let Sergeant Walker add anything he wants to, and then Chris on the legality side of us trying to adopt an ordinance that has to do with this type of panhandling in this type of situation. But our purpose today was to bring this to you, show you where we're going, and then see if you wanted to follow up with either a work session or go to hearing on this. And so, Sergeant Walker, did you have anything to add?
Are there any questions about the structure? Have the commissioners had a chance to go over this?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, what we're saying in this ordinance is that you cannot panhandle from a public place into a public roadway, whether a contract is reached. You can't go out in the street. I can ignore you as a driver. You're still committing an offense if you're out in the roadway. There's an offense if you stop to do that. From a public safety standpoint, even the ACLU is on board with this whole situation. So those people standing on the traffic islands, the people standing at the off-ramps, the people standing on the major thoroughfares would not be able to panhandle in those areas. Obviously, there are common sense processes. Mm-hmm. You can hail a taxi cab. If there's an emergency, you can flag somebody down. Public transit types of things, and obviously lawful duties.
Can you explain to me what part the ACLU is having an issue with?
We tried to codify places and times. We said it's unreasonable and unsafe for a panhandler to stand next to me at an ATM machine while I'm pumping gas, while I'm waiting for my bus. And they said that's freedom of speech.
So whatever supplemental steps we potentially can come up with in the future to handle other situations, this by itself just simply addresses a very clear, legally defensible solution. And the actionable part of that is what's been highlighted there. It's if somebody's in the public right-of-way and they're approaching a vehicle that's not parked, to get some benefit from them, this triggers.
Right. That's correct, sir.
I'm very supportive of it.
We had some incidents where people were harassed or panhandled at ATM machines, and we thought that was an unsafe situation. So even though it might be an unsafe situation, the judge says
The issue is not the question of whether you have the right to be safe when you use automated teller machines, or whether or not you're at a bus stop or any of those locations where you're sort of vulnerable. You've got to be where you got where you are, because that's where you catch the bus or that's where you get your money. The court would say that if somebody's trying to coerce or intimidate you into doing something that you have a legal right not to do, that's a crime already. What happens is trying to word an ordinance to get to that limited issue is particularly difficult. So what a lot of the counties have done is said you can't solicit for money within 4 feet or 5 feet or 6 feet of an ATM machine. That's simple, it's easy to administer, and that's what the court said was a violation of their right, their freedom of speech. So part of the issue and the challenge is trying to tailor an ordinance that's narrow enough that only gets at the conduct that is inappropriate. Coercion is a crime right now, and so if you're out there and if I ask you for money and you won't give it to me, so me and my two friends stand right in front of you, and when you try to walk around us, we move over right in front of you, so you can't get past. There's a point where what I'm doing is illegal already, and I can be arrested for doing that. The problem is, you know, when you're dealing with, everybody's had it in downtown Portland that's gone down to Saturday Market. You get down in sections of Davis and Burnside, and it's pretty common that people get pretty vocal if you don't give them money, and you're not comfortable to leave. That's the kind of behavior that we'd like to prevent, but trying, and so we already have some ordinances that address it. Trying to write up a panhandling ordinance is still a struggle. So the question was, do we go forward with what we can and continue to work on the balance? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that's why we're here, mm-hmm. with an idea that there's still more work to do, because it clearly, at night, ATMs, there are certainly situations that you don't want to subject your citizens to where they feel like they still have to go there and they're going into this group of people knowing what's going to happen and not feeling comfortable about doing it.
Is that also would be on private property?
Well, typically a lot of these ATM machines are on the public street. Sometimes they are. I mean, you might have banks that have them, they have the drive-through and you have to walk around the back. In that case, that could be a trespass, but again, it's pretty difficult because they're open, there's travel lanes. Your better argument is to try and find a way to word the ordinance so that you give some special protection to people who are in those areas, and we're still working on that.
So, David, I agree with you. I think that we could work on that down the road, but we need to adopt what we have here.
The language that David pointed out not only just for money, It's for solicitation of anything.
Oh, yeah. It can be all kinds of stuff. Yeah. It does. I mean,
good services.
Right.
Cash.
And so down on Andreessen and Fourth Plain, there's couples there, and there's couples up there on where you pull around to go up 39th Street. I suppose husband and wife, one has a accordion, the other one has a guitar or banjo. And so the other day, just for curiosity, after us talking about this, I pull up around and I stopped up there, and they said, if anybody stops me, we're entertainers. We're entertaining, and if they want to drop something off to us for the music that they're listening to while they're sitting in traffic.
The problem with that is, I mean, just looking at this from a public safety standpoint, the problem becomes when you're in traffic, you're supposed to be driving or ready to drive. And you can be well-intentioned. So you stop to get your money out, and pretty soon you're stopped in traffic because there are people behind you waiting for you to fish through your wallet for the right denomination or the right amount of change. Or you have situations where you send your kid, you have your child in the car, and you say, go run over and give him $1, and then you've got to figure out where you're going to pull over so you can pick your child back up. And those are the kind of situations that create safety issues. And one of the reasons why this ordinance, the court said, is enforceable and is a legitimate use of your police power. So we're going to take this back to you in an open setting. It either has to go to a public, well, it has to go to a public hearing. Mm-hmm. But we can either take it directly to a public hearing, or we can bring it to you on work session. The question for you is, do you need to see it in work session, or do you want us to go directly to public hearing?
I'd like directly to public hearing. Okay.
Could I interject with a question?
I agree.
How would this affect two girls in a neighborhood with a table and a cup of lemonade?
Well, it's not in the roadway. So
if they're on the sidewalk or the roadway, this...
If they're in the roadway, it's going to be as illegal for... There isn't a distinction between they look cute and they have innocent eyes. Because you have the same problem with parents who have no morals about sending their kids out in the street to
okay, well, this doesn't say in the roadway. It says occupying any public property adjacent to any public roadway. They could be on the sidewalk with a lemonade stand and a sign soliciting traffic going by.
It's the same way with all these churches along St. John's, all along 99, that's out there with their signs waving for car washes.
And that's another example. Car washes, where you're soliciting them to turn into a driveway.
We will. Our goal is to go after people who are in the roadway adjacent or in the right of way adjacent to the roadway.
Okay.
And so
I understand the goal is panhandlers, but I'm just asking, how does it affect the girl with the lemonade stand in a neighborhood? Or
I think you have to trust that law enforcement is busy. They're not going to be abusing this. And if there's really a concern, we can narrow it. But my gut sense is you don't have to worry. What you're going to have to worry about is he's not out there often enough. Not that he's out there too much.
Actually,
I think you can rely on law enforcement to use proper discretionary power with this ordinance and enforce it in the nature toward public safety rather than a neighborhood.
Do you pick them up when you do that? Do you pick them up and bring them in when you pick them up for?
No, sorry.
And how does this affect the firefighters doing fill the booth, or do they get a special?
That's been an issue before, and I think between now and a hearing we can work on either exemptions or other language. Well, but it's not about panhandling specifically or going after panhandlers. It's about traffic safety, and so we got to find a happy medium where the law enforcement has the tools and the ability to make that decision about when it's a traffic safety issue. It'll deal with how busy the intersection is and all those kinds of things.
Complaint driven.
By and large, I think the answer is we have to pursue equal enforcement. We'll work with law enforcement, but I'm not going to propose that you carve out special exceptions, because that's where you get in trouble with enforcement. So it may be that law enforcement or firefighters, if they're doing something, will be on the sidewalk or they'll be someplace that's outside of this arena. And if we need to narrow the definition of county right-of-way or public mm-hmm. public property, the county right-of-way, we can work through those. Those are less, those are details we can get there.
You're giving the ACLU more opportunities to...
Yeah, the more you give special treatment to one group or another, even if they're well-intentioned, yeah. Salvation Army is another group, mm-hmm. the more likely you are to have a problem. And so if we say we treat everybody the same, then nobody has a complaint that they're being treated unfairly.
I'd like to say something on this. Peter, I'm so glad you brought up those situations. And I understand, is it Sergeant Walker?
Yes, sir.
I trust the discretion of our sheriff's staff. But I don't doubt that. However, I'm thinking just good policy doesn't require regular discretion to be exercised to not enforce fundamental things that commonly happen, like lemonade stands, like car washes, like those kind of things that those are unintended consequences. Is too broad of a stroke, because we have good staff now, but a decade from now we might not. We might have some very activist staff out there that we wonder how they ever became part of our team, and they could very well go after us. Say, all right, Susie.
Like I said, we can easily make public property right away, and we'll narrow it within a certain distance of the road and intersections, because these issues are not usually ones that happen while people are traveling down the road, because yes. cars are moving. It's usually at intersections that we're concerned, okay. or at
And those parameters, I think, to make this good policy, need to somehow be better defined in here, because the neighborhoods, this panhandling normally doesn't happen inside friendly neighborhoods. It happens on the freeway exit off ramps and major intersections. Somehow I feel like it's not ready for public hearing. That should be really addressed first to make sure that
we've been working on this.
If I could interject one more point, that you said the point was to prevent traffic problems, but nothing in this description talks about a solicitation that creates a traffic problem. It only identifies solicitating in the public.
We don't want to wait till there to be a traffic problem. The idea is to prevent one in the first place. So the idea is to keep them from even soliciting on the public roadway, so you don't have to. I mean, enforcement should not depend on whether a car is waiting to for this car to give money or do something. The illegal behavior is using the roadway for something that it wasn't designed for. It's designed to move vehicles and traffic and pedestrians. It's not designed for people to attempt to raise income or raise money. And so the point about this is not that we should have to prove that they're creating the potential for that, and that's why it's not addressed more detail.
We seem to be focusing in on car washes or lemonade stands. To me, a car wash, they're still up on the sidewalk, they're not causing a traffic jam, and to get that service, you literally pull off the roadway. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the lemonade stand, if you want to stop for lemonade, you pull over, you don't pull up to it and get served at your car. So you actually pull off to the side of the road and park your car and walk back. I think they're not the same. So I think what it is, it's fine the way it is. It's better than what we have today. And we've been a long, long time with this. We could split this hair for the next year. And I'd like to move on with what we have.
Is there a separate statute that handles
And we can amend it, David, later on if you want.
Is there a separate statute that handles people waving campaign signs for the political people, free speech, or picket signs for people out there picketing?
Well, they're not soliciting money, and they're not.
But somebody read this. You got to make sure, like you're talking about the exemption, you got to make sure that it pertains to solicitation of money or wares.
Right. Well, I guess with the political signs are usually in overpasses. I mean, you sometimes, I guess, have them at intersections, but by and large, the ones I'm familiar with are at overpasses I-5, or I mean, Fourth Plain, you know, some of those kinds of locations. But we can think about it. Again, I think when you go back to the definitions, it helps answer some of these questions, because what we're regulating tends to be, or has specific definitions for it, and I think it's going to eliminate some of the concerns. But we can tighten that up, and certainly between now and then, if the it's a two steps. We either can come to the board and make changes and go to work session, or we can go directly to public hearing and make the changes in anticipation of the hearing. And quite frankly, as the board knows, we've done it before. If the public hearing requires additional amendment, we've done that before, and we can do it after the next public hearing. So you've got really a few different alternatives for when we make our changes.
David?
The examples that you gave are exactly the kind of examples that do not apply here, because this does not cover the transaction. The transaction is what occurs after they pull over and decide they're going to buy something. This covers the solicitation.
Sure.
It says to attract the attention of, and whether or not a transaction takes place. So certainly we can't beat it to death, and certainly we don't want to delay this any longer than necessary. But what I would make an appeal to our sheriff's office is this. Take a look at addressing some parameters that would somehow not rely exclusively on the discretion not to enforce. In other words, the lemonade stands, the car washes for the teenagers to raise money,
So what you're talking about, instead of trying to name all of them, go back and say...
Those are examples.
Safety. If it affects safety of the highway.
It's hard to define that,
the reason I go there is that you leave that... The discretion to the officer will decide whether or not it's a safety issue. And the more you tighten it up, the more you tie his hands to make that discretion, and it becomes argumentative if you tighten it up anymore.
If you're driving down 112 to get to 112 parallel SR 500, and you turn up 112 there, there's always an old gentleman there every day of the week that's there, and people pulling up there, lined up there, all rolling down their window, giving this old guy right there in front of the YWCA. And the same way on Andreessen and 4th Plain, same way on 39th Street. Folks out there that are collecting money, and I don't know if they drive Cadillacs or Mercedes afterwards or not.
What's your point? The point is
there are certain locations that you can... These guys see them all the time out there soliciting.
I haven't happened to me coming off the ramp all the time. You have people stopping on the ramp, fishing for money, and then everybody else is stopped.
Yeah.
And then by the time the light turns red, they make it through, and the other 30 cars are still sitting. Those are things.
And I'd like to remind the commissioners, too, that under the age of 8, you can't commit a crime. Under the age of 12, a whole separate hearing has to take place to figure out if you have intent. There goes our lemonade stand.
Can we put an age in here below the age of, this only applies to individuals above the age of 15 or something?
We could for our information campaign, but it's already state law.
I think you're talking about competency.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
can I propose something that might clarify this a little bit more, because my concern when I read it was the second sentence in paragraph A that says an offense occurs when the solicitation is made, comma, a transaction is completed, or an exchange of money, goods, or services takes place. So that, you know, brought to mind the lemonade stand, the car wash, the pizza guy, because you're soliciting somebody in the roadway and then a transaction takes place, but could we specify at the end of this that the transaction takes place in the travel portion of the roadway or something like that, to say it's not a situation where you're legally parked, or it's not a situation where you pull off the road to do something,
and the transaction is intended to take place in the travel portion of the roadway.
Yeah, it's in the travel portion.
Actually, that's a good point. That's a good solution.
Would that specify and clarify enough?
It's formula driven. It's easy at a glance to be able for the officer to be able to say, I can tell you. You know, I just saw it right then.
Yeah, if you're handing money that in keeps the roadway, it simple. That could
be two infractions, the car that's stopping and the guy that's walking up to the car. Is that correct?
Yeah, the solicitation itself, but the idea is, I see what Peter's describing. Let me work with that. I think we can, the idea is that the money is given from the car. It's not that the car pulls over in most cases. But the idea is they're naturally intended to occur within the public right of way, and I'll put some language there that gets to that issue.
That's a good point, and that is there is nothing intended in here that is supposed to somehow go after the person in the car. This is only the person approaching the car, right? We want to make sure that's really clear.
That's our intent. Because issues related to vehicles blocking traffic are a whole separate matter under the revised code in the state.
We can manage.
Want to make those changes and bring it back?
That sounds good. I got one other thing, because it doesn't say in here, but it's implied. It's probably okay. Political sign waving elections. You know, they're trying to get the attention of, and they're soliciting their vote. It's a stretch, but perhaps we should somehow make sure that we're not trying to turn that into a crime.
I'd have to rely on Chris and Axel, but the definitions we have related to conducting a transaction. Sure, I'm trying to get you to vote for my candidate, but we aren't conducting a transaction that is going to affect the flow of traffic or require me to step out into the traveled portion of the roadway.
Yeah, well, and it's not a solicitation for anything of monetary value, and so whether it even constitutes solicitation is a...
I spend a lot of money for a vote.
Well, and I understand that sounds like it makes sense, but this says right here on page 2 of mine... 5, an offense occurs when the solicitation is made, whether or not an actual employment relationship is created or a transaction is completed.
Right. But
so if they're standing out there getting the attention, it doesn't matter if anybody gives them money. If they're trying to get money from people or trying to get some goods or services, they're guilty.
Right. And so the point is, going back to the voting idea, they have to knowingly conduct a solicitation, which would get you back to a request for something of monetary value,
other than a vote.
Which a vote isn't. It doesn't, in the traditional sense of the term. While you can sell your votes, and while it may happen in Illinois, I'm not sure how much that's an issue in the state of Washington.
Well, the intent is leads to a transaction, or could lead to a transaction happening in the roadway,
right. Naturally intended to occur in the public right of way.
Right.
So I think we can make those changes that can get that
great.
Get this issue.
If you can make those changes, I'm good to go.
The panhandling that bothers me is like at Safeway or Fred Meyer's, when they go through the parking lot and everybody that comes out of the store goes in the store, they're right there.
And we're not there yet, because those are the ones that are the very kind of cases that the ACLU had a field day with.
That comes in the parking lot.
And that would be... I expect that we encourage our sheriff department to continue to see what other ways, what other components can be added to our code to ensure the safety and to solve the additional problems in the future as separate steps.
The store was to call up, they would probably classify it as loitering.
Private business can trespass. Anyone they choose to.
So they can ask them to leave their property.
Okay. So with those changes, schedule a hearing. A hearing date is the direction of the board?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I want to thank Sergeant Walker. He's been very patient with Chris and I, and we've been scrambling to work on this, but I do...
Here I
really
go, apologizing for those two again.
Yeah.
Exactly. My pleasure.
Thanks, Sergeant. Sure appreciate your help.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Commissioner Milka, can we bounce back up to letters of support?
Yes.
2 seconds. We kind of bounced over it, but I wanted to make you aware that one that you have signed, because it's in a red folder already, is you're aware of, was for the kids' vote. I just want to put on here, because we got a lot of them this week or last week. Yep, and Peter's working on one for the, remember the Senior Softball League came in,
yes,
and we had that agreement. They asked us, because they're going to go out on a fundraising campaign, if we would write a letter of support from you.
Yes.
And
great.
Peter graciously is helping me with that. Two other kind
so
of...
So on this consensus, yes.
Yeah,
right?
Well,
for the minute's sake.
I just wanted you to be aware that we got asked.
One of them not sitting in my car.
Right, right. Two other ones I just want you to be aware of, and we'll come up with, or you can give us direction. Rick Grabner, who was helpful in this panhandling discussion, but we got a letter from a doctor, a citizen, thanking him for all this work he did. He went out and he cleared out a vacant lot that was all overgrown,
mm-hmm, yes, he
and
did.
He made the employees feel safe. So I didn't know if there's something we want to do for him, a letter, or have him in and thank him.
You know, I got him active in the VVA now.
Okay.
And
hey,
he came to the stand down, and the guy needs some companion. He had lost his wife here, yeah, in the last few months, and he was really, really beside himself. And that would really be kind of cool if we could.
Yeah, either bring him in and thank him, or I was thinking write up a letter thanking him for doing that.
Yeah, a letter of recognition would be good.
Okay. We called on a lot on 44th and St. John's,
uh-huh,
and they have a whole crew of people up there because what they'd done, the berry briars and stuff, it got so thick they tunneled back through there.
Mm-hmm.
They were living back in there just like a big home. And
he went up
panhandling on the corner of that, so they're clearing that out today.
He kind of stuck his neck out the way he described it to me was a little dangerous, and he just boldly went in there and said, you need to leave.
Yep.
I'm thinking of when we are done with this, with these meetings, we have a section in the minutes that says action on each one of these things. And I just want to make sure that as we informally say yes, 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 that it translates to action. It's because otherwise it's like the discussion, and discussion doesn't move action. So if you could itemize and say, I want approval for this, or this, and this, we'll do the motion, yes, approve them all, and that way the action, the minutes can reflect that.
Okay. Anything else on that, Axel?
Not on Mr. Grabner. I think I can work on some action to get him recognized at a hearing. And I did have another one that came up that I wanted you to be aware of, and I won't go too deep into the details. This came up from Rob Klug and the traffic department through Bill Wright. But we had somebody sideswiped one of the buttons you push to cross the sidewalk, and it was hanging there. And apparently those are pretty expensive pieces of equipment, and someone attempted to steal it, and another citizen kind of stepped up and challenged them on that and saved our button, got it back,
actually,
and returned it to the
traffic
department.
The guy actually
so
took the buttons and started putting it in his car, and a woman challenged him.
Oh.
And so he turned around
and
gave
he gave it back. So anyhow, I was thinking maybe
recognition.
We'll do some recognition
sure.
for her, or just
good.
Thank her. For stepping up and
sure.
keeping our piece of equipment
okay.
in our hands. So
all right.
those are just two to be
okay.
aware of.
So that's, are you done with your action items?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the action items that were just listed one by one here that we all verbally gave our consent to for T. Axel.
I would second that, Mr.
Yep.
Chairman.
Good.
Okay. All in favor?
I'm not going to have another.
I'm just thinking of Jennifer out there. She's going to say, is that an action item or is that a discussion?
No, it's very, very
make it
clear.
For her.
All right. We're all done with those.
The idea of a board meeting is informal as can be, and only through recognizing and adopting the minutes have we gone to the formality of adopting the minutes.
And the auditor said we got to do this. I'm just keeping us
for
all
the minutes. For the minutes.
Yeah, for the minutes. For the minutes. So.
Okay.
Think of Yul Brynner. So else? Let it be written, so let it be said, or something like that.
Ed.
Well, since you picked me each time, I'm going to let David go first this time.
Well, I'm easy. I don't have anything.
Okay. Okay.
I do all my homework before I get here.
Well, you know, I would like to say Tom and I attended a function Saturday night, and I thought it was had to do with the 13th annual National Alcoholic thing down at the Key, and I thought it was outstanding. I thought when you talk about a letter, and I did talk to Mark about it, two of the county employees that were involved in that thing that put it on. I thought that maybe it would be appropriate to do the same thing, Tom, for those two individuals. That
well, we also have volunteers,
yeah.
Like the chairman there.
Right, the chairman.
Karen.
Yeah.
Llewellyn,
huh?
But
Karen Llewellyn, our
yeah.
volunteer coordinator.
Right.
A little short,
and I thought they did a spectacular job.
Probably just a recognition of a fine job that they've done.
Right, yeah.
That outside building of the key was nearly full.
Yeah.
There was three tables on the outside that wasn't full.
Great.
Yeah.
And other than that, they had everything there, and it went on. Boy, it was right, two hours, right up to
yep.
a minute.
Yep.
The timing was great.
Yeah.
We had visitors from Seattle down here.
Terrific.
And another group come from someplace else, too.
The other one was excellence recognition of businesses and stuff that they recognized out at the Heathman on Friday night.
Great.
Absolutely packed, and a lot of good business got recognition for their volunteerism.
Great.
And that, and so, but it's sometimes it's hard. You got to go up and say to the chairman, "Thank you very much for mm-hmm. doing it." So, but it was a great. It was packed like this one was.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
And that, but a lot of good people were there, and I just think that we need to do more of that. And then the parks, pass these books around to you guys.
One thing at a time. Make sure we get that noted because, you know, we always talk about our volunteers in Clark County, and it's kind of neat when you recognize them as they go along.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Parks.
Yeah.
It must be in my in-basket.
Yeah. So I passed each one of these on to you. They had the Parks Foundation meeting mm-hmm. last night,
mm-hmm.
and it was full.
Mm-hmm.
And full, and they had a great video. I think it would be nice if the commissioners, maybe if there was some way that you could show that at a commission meeting. It wasn't very long. It was like about 3 or 4 minutes showing what the parks were.
Actually, what we can do is put that on the grid, a link to it to the grid.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they have a short presentation.
Presentation.
So we started doing that department by department, and it's one of the things that we want people to be aware of in Clark County. That would be a good thing to bring up, Axel, at the beginning of one of our hearings.
Okay. Outreach.
We kind of drifted away from that for a while. We just got busy, and it's informative for the citizens to see what things we're doing.
Can I have this commercial launch?
Yep.
Yeah. That's part of that grant thing. That's just...
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is that the last meeting that I brought up, basically David and I talked about it. He was going to check with Mike Bomar. I think that... I think he's doing an outstanding job, Tom and David, and I would think that maybe it would be appropriate, since we're trying to reach out to all these people, reach out there and have a work session, have Mike come in here and tell us what they're doing in order to help create jobs in this community.
We are doing that with our economic development here.
Yeah.
Jeff along
Swanson
with
support
Jeff,
too.
They work together, and then I think they come to us biannually or quarterly and give us an update, a report.
They did it last year. And so why don't we do this? Why don't we ask Jeff to communicate with CREDC, the ports, we have more than one in Clark County, and consider, look to him for leadership to say, is it invitation
update
for us all to get on the same page to how can we champion business for Clark County and see what he can come up with to have that presentation here.
Yeah, after I went to the last meeting, I was so impressed with what they were doing, and the gal is doing the outreach, trying to recruit businesses into Clark County, which the county's getting benefit from these businesses they're recruiting. So
we recruited?
Huh? Yeah.
We have seven.
Yeah, they're doing. So anyway, I think it's again, David, Tom, I think it's the point to where we need to start building the coalitions back up again.
We have. You still go to the meetings on your liaison.
Commissioner Barnes is.
Oh, you go to their meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. That's good.
So for the path forward, let's invite Jeff to champion that. coordinate not just with that organization, but with multiple organizations, because that's the definition.
Yeah, he is our person.
Okay.
I can ask him to do that.
So, other than that, that's probably good for the day.
Commissioner, did you have any statements about that? I see your picture.
Yeah.
Oh, this one here.
Stormwater facility. Do you have anything related to that?
Oh.
That was the stormwater.
I thought you were probably bring this up.
Okay.
That's the reason I brought the picture in.
Okay. I did make contact with one of the neighborhoods. There's an assisted living
Right there.
Center here. I did make some initial contact, asked them if they would be interested in discussing a private-public partnership to develop that area around their. They already kind of use it. There's an improved walking trail around that facility that they have direct access to, so they're already kind of using it.
I was thinking along the way that they would give it to the county, and they get the tax credit, and then we would make
Well, there's two things. This was the 7-acre parcel that the Department of Environmental Services owns. This is the stormwater facility, but this area here and up here is available for park use, and it was on the consent agenda last week to designate
combine
itself.
It all together.
This is a stormwater facility that they had to put in when they developed this.
Well, I didn't know
this
that.
Isn't really...
It drives the boat.
It doesn't look like it would facilitate a path around it or something, but this definitely would, and some tables, picnic area, whatever. And so I will follow up with them.
Yeah, let's wait. We're going to get a rainy season, and let's see what we come up with there.
Right.
I have never seen water in there. I own a home within five blocks of there. And that's the reason we're looking at that for a park and using it, because it's fenced on one side, on the north east corner of that.
A fence right here, so the neighborhood people over here can't get to it.
But over there,
but these people they've got have access to it.
They've got a path into it.
There's a driveway in this way.
So yeah, it's beautiful.
So we would like to see it better utilized by the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Two other things on park, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Scott Hill Park down at Woodland, the one that the county is involved with, Calhoun County, Clark County is involved with a park down there that we met Saturday, went down for meeting Saturday. And went up there. It's a beautiful location. It used to be a tulip field, and then a developer bought the property, put 400 houses, and during the economy downturn, he went bankrupt. So now they've donated that. They've donated that property back to Woodland, but supposedly, according to some agreements that they have between Clark County and Calhoun County, is supposed to help develop that park.
So, don't know anything about it.
Yeah, well. I got an invitation.
It'd be nice if we were a part of it that we would know.
Yeah. So anyway.
So why don't you help us to close
the
communication
paperwork.
Gap on
that? I'll get your paperwork.
Okay. I have something back
but
on this.
They also had Ed Orcott was there, and they had the representative from up at Chehalis.
I want to be real careful what we do with our parks money because we're shorthanded and we're behind schedule building our parks.
Right, they're looking for grants in that, Tom. And the other ones,
That foundation,
right?
They could apply through that.
Right.
And that would be our
They've applied, I think, for everything, but somehow Clark County got involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just get the information so it'll get to you. The other one is I met with Barry Kane, Graymore, on the last Friday. On his project down here, trying to push him along. One of the holdups on that is park, a 10-acre piece of land that goes to Columbia River. And before the county and the city did their splitting and parting of the ways, they've been working trying to hope that the county would be part of helping them raise money to develop that park right there.
That park in the city?
Huh? Well, but it's in Clark County, Tom.
We separated from the city.
Yeah, I know you did. But before you separated from the city, supposedly Clark County was part of the parks, the overall parks board was part of trying to put this park together to help that project along so that he would build his $510 million project. They're going to tear down the Centennial Building that we were in. It's going to start tearing it down next week or week after so Columbia Street can go straight on through to get that done, but the requirement is that the city and the county and the taxpayers have to raise the money to build this park. And so I talked to Sherry last night about it a little bit, And so maybe we'd get together. But supposedly the county, before everybody split up and went their own separate ways, it's they got a beautiful picture of this park, how it would look and everything. And just because it's in the city, Tom, it is part of Clark County.
Just I'd love to have the city come out and help me develop another park out here.
I know.
Have the city come out. It's right next to the city limits.
But Warshugel has 60 acres that they purchased. The mayor of Warshugel wants the county to jump in and help him. They don't have any parks at Warshugel. They want the county to jump in and help them build a park like the Luke Jensen Park. And this park at Scotts Hill is almost identical to the Luke Jensen Park.
We tax the people in the county to build the park. And I tax the people in Washougal to build their park?
Well, they're saying if the county has a parks board and they're building parks within the county, why isn't Washougal entitled to have a park too?
We gave Camas and Washougal those parks around the lake there recently.
Clackamas Lake.
Yeah.
But again, all I'm bringing up is what people are saying, Tom, that they're asking for cooperation, whatever that word is that David uses all the time.
Coalition.
Good, out of the goodness of your heart, or whatever it is.
So I'm like together. 3 years behind. Years behind on what we promised the people in development of our parks.
But I also helped push those when they had those initiatives that they put on the ballot to. Tax Burt Bridge Creek and all this stuff for parks. I went out and campaigned like a son of a gun.
And that's where we're spending labor that
to
money.
Vote, got labor to vote for that and support it for parks.
And we're spending that money.
But it didn't just say that it was only going to be for just certain places. It was for all of Clark County.
No, it wasn't.
For the city.
No, very specifically, it was for that area. We have on our property taxes in the county,
right.
We have a parks tax.
Okay.
And that pays for our parks.
Right. But that doesn't mean we can't work together in order to build more parks within the county.
I would love to put a parks tax on the city. I'd love to get the council down there. That's where we get the money to fund the parks.
Okay. I'll throw it around to you guys, whether it's in Yakima, whether it's in Amboy.
I would love to do that.
Yep.
But the thing is that we're not doing what we told the people we're going to do.
Well, you just help with Yakult, Tom.
That was the grant foundation.
Well, then, let's show them how to go after grants. We can work with the people to show them how to go after grants and not just say no.
I think that they have a park department down there that runs all the pools and entertainment centers.
He was asking for help.
Okay.
Barry Kane was asking for help.
The tax that has already been approved by the voters... There was 35 parks that were, and we still have scheduled out parks to build to fulfill that, and certainly we want to be able to encourage parks wherever they lie, but in order to actually fund them, we're looking for funding to finish up what we already promised the people and already taxed them to do to build out our parks. So certainly the Karen Llewellyn with our parks volunteers and whatever we can do to help build goodwill and all. Well, the question is, how can we do that? What we don't have right now is the availability to pledge funds that are already spoken for the parks that are still to be finished within our county, that we can't just move to the front of the list something else that was in the city just because we like it.
No.
We need to be able to each take their turn. But whatever, aside from money, what can we do? So I would, if there's other kind of documents and agreements or intentions or something that was created back when there was a joint board, advisory board between, it would be helpful to locate that and see what was intended there, because then at least we won't lose that history. Yeah. Okay, sound good?
And they're all voters. They're all voters in Clark County.
I want to revisit this here. There should be a name for this.
We haven't got a name yet.
Okay.
I thought we maybe would name it M&M Park.
Okay, well, anyway, this
that's
one
that's
it
fine.
Just has a parcel number on it, the 107970. Here's what I'm thinking. If the vision is to build a trail around that park, that not only would we extend the invitation to the adjacent landowners there, though, especially the one that you talked to, but
yeah,
that we would...
The park goes clear up here.
Okay.
This is the park up here.
Okay. That we would also include a bigger invitation to volunteers who want to be able to help build that. Mm-hmm. This experiment is really moving in the right direction, and that we've got lots of support for building new trails, and in this case, this is mostly a trail.
You have to go visit that because it's flatter than you think it is. Mm-hmm. There's room for a baseball park.
Okay.
There's a place for a badminton game. I mean, okay. In several locations. This is a huge. It goes clear up to here.
Mm-hmm.
This right here is the drain field,
mm-hmm.
and we're considering it comes in here. You have off-street parking,
mm-hmm.
and you fill this area here. And that's reading, here I wouldn't recommend it, but over here I was hoping to find out, but we found out something that might put the mm-hmm. locks on that.
Okay.
That is the storm facility for the assisted living. And I'm not sure if we could adopt that and improve on it.
And that's also in the city limits.
Oh, it is. Over here.
That parcel?
The city limits is exactly right here.
Oh, I'll be darned.
So.
Well, maybe that's where they can help.
The city can come up and build
that
park.
When Peter brought this up the first time about 3 weeks ago, it's been laying on my desk. I kept saying in my mind, how's come there hasn't been more discussion about it? Because he mentioned the parks thing, so I thought mm-hmm. I'd bring it out here and throw it on the table today so we can get
it. That's what we did the other day.
Yeah.
We went into partnership with Stormwater Facilities and the Parks Department Tuesday.
Yeah.
We authorized them to go ahead on that.
Yeah. So DES moved forward, and we got it designated.
Yeah,
for
we approved it.
We're going to go look at it.
No, we approved it. Yeah. We approved
it. That was on the consent agenda last week.
Uh-huh. So that this was just a stormwater facility.
Yeah. Right.
And now it's designated as a multi-use, parks being and trails being included. We approved that. Mm-hmm. And it may be that because we got the city over here and we got the county over here, the city may have their own policy that doesn't, maybe it's not, maybe they don't welcome volunteer labor to construct trails. If they do, then that would be great because we can maybe connect it all together. My point here is that we could potentially accomplish simpler, more bite-sized things mm-hmm. by volunteering just simply to say, okay, a trail's easy. We can at least build some kind of trail there mm-hmm. and still have a vision for the future that would include all the other amenities you just listed, Tom, mm-hmm. that wouldn't hold us up because we're not trying to bite off too much because we don't have that kind of money to develop it all at once. Mm-hmm. But if we could embrace, for instance, Philida Neighborhood Association, they had volunteer professionals that could design the park up to standards and without costing the taxpayers anything, perhaps we could include that kind of invitation here where, hey, community, you got professional designers out there that want to participate in helping to bring to pass something that would be stage one that we can accomplish for little or nothing for a trail. And then stage two, you got reservations for it, so you don't have to tear out what you put in. So that you want to do your badminton court or whatever else you want to add later, you could do that. So I would tune in Karen Llewellyn, the Parks Advisory Board, the Neighborhood Associations, and put the word out and say, hey.
We need to have staff go look at it first.
And staff, of course. Sure. Starts with staff. Because staff.
Have them go look at it and see what they look at. And I think this winter they're going to probably be taking a second look at it in the wet times to see where the trails might go.
Sounds good.
My goal in contacting the assisted living facility is it's a huge facility, it's a business, it's a direct benefit to their customer base. Yeah. If they have extra facilities there, they can use it. And it already appears like they are using it as a walking trail.
But I thought they could be
just the lead in taking care of funding and publicizing it and maybe fundraising if they just...
The only path that I saw come out of that high-density housing area, and it came out between the trees, and they have a little path. It looked like they might be taking their animals out there for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I think before we really open it up, there's one area that of question of danger, and that is that there's a grate over the, there's a concrete bridge mm-hmm. in there. And yes. at the west side of the concrete bridge is a real thick, heavy mesh.
Oh, right here.
It's not bolted down. It was on there crooked. And the other yeah. day I was out there with Benton, and we set it back on there square, mm-hmm. but it could be moved again. Mm-hmm. It's not deep. It's just an inspection hole. When the water comes, you can see it go through there. That's about what it is. But
there's another potential source of volunteerism that we, if we were to get ahead of it with some kind of a plan, that we may be able to accomplish a great deal in one day. Mm-hmm. And that is every year, hundreds of churches in our areas pull together and say, we've got hundreds or thousands of volunteers, give us something to do.
Ooh, second Saturday.
Is that what they call it? Like Kevin Pulau, for instance, helps lead that. We could contact them and ask them, when is that date? And are you interested in a community-wide project like this that you can have dozens or hundreds of people come in and just help whack that trail out if we have a plan? Could you check in that?
There's also Martin Luther King Day of Service in January.
Great. So there's two. And if we know of any others, that sounds great. So,
okay.
So it all starts with a vision and a plan.
I'll do what I can with the leads.
Okay, thank you.
I would really encourage you and Ed to drive by there. This is something that we've been asking for 4 years.
Great.
And that is
okay.
combining our stormwater facilities with our parks, as well as our schools, as well as our other green spaces. Mm-hmm. This is a beautiful, beautiful area.
Oh, yeah. What are we doing when it comes? We had talked about cooperating with the schools, mm-hmm. liability insurance, unpadlocking the playgrounds. What are we doing? Is that on your list, Peter?
I don't think we've really...
Mayor Warshugel think that's great.
Well, it's on your list now.
Well, I think we should talk to Bill.
Yeah, he was up here, and I know we had the discussion. I'm not sure where it is right now.
Okay.
But he, you know, they were working on it.
So, like, untie his hands and...
Yeah, didn't it come out of that last, was it last board time or the one before where Bill was up here with Heath and they were giving
yeah.
the parks up to
I'd like to have, get his remarks back on this one here that we found that he's going to be a part of too. And it's just exciting.
Yes.
I'm excited to see that.
Innovation.
Okay. You done? Anything else?
Got a staff report and all that good stuff.
Commissioner's report. Oh. You don't have anything. You're done. I've got a couple things. I need to get the legal carry thing finished up. It's floating around, stuck on someone's desk.
Actually, it's in my office, and
I am stuck on someone's
actually,
desk.
Actually, it's not stuck. We're making progress.
I'm
not aware of it.
I only want half a page.
It's not falling through the crack. We'll get her done.
When are you going to have it done?
Well, tell you what. Let me... I will get back with you before next week with a date.
Fair enough. This week we'll know to put it on the calendar on the consent agenda. We have been
legal
bouncing.
Carry.
Huh?
Legal carry?
Yeah.
Legal carry
For
employees in this building.
Are we going to do a survey of the employees before we do that?
No, I don't do that for my policies.
Huh?
I don't do that when I make policies.
And we already got plenty of that, Axel.
And we went to legal, we went to our sheriff's department, and you know, everybody else could legally carry in this building.
And the sheriff's department, you had a survey of the sheriffs to see that whether they thought it was a good idea for employees to carry?
No, they didn't give me a survey. I'm not going to give them one. Isn't that fair? They give me a survey, I want my opinion, I'll give it to them. So the point is that our legal told us that we're on the hook and we're liable for anything that goes wrong here in our building to our employees. And so we had the legal staff draft up some concerns. And so what the legal staff came back with was potentially removing the rights of our citizens if they chose to legally carry here with a legal permit as any other citizen.
And who's got a copy of that? I've never seen
a
copy of that.
Well, I think there's still some opinions being formulated. I think Emily's working on it downstairs, and I think there's still some things left to be discussed.
And it came back, and it was like two pages long. And we said, at that time, we gave directions and said, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about if you legal carry the way, and what came up is that Steve Stewart brought it up, and something came up about legal carry here, that people can legally carry here because there's no courtrooms here. So the general public can legally carry here, and our employees can't, but elected officials could. And I thought, it just doesn't seem fair, even though I'm elected, that I can protect myself and my employees don't. But then in the conversations going around, we found out that many of our employees already legally carry here. They're legal carry permits, but they're illegal when they carry here as employees. And some of the things that we had that I saw that it was reason for dismissal if you were legally carrying here as your as their employer, that we had a right to do that. But yet we were still liable for the protection of these people. And so, like I said, the first thing that came out was like 2 pages long. We said, no, that's not what we had in mind. What we're concerned about is them being safe. And it was considered whether or not they would take a class, whether or not we'd accept the 214. That was a concealed weapon, meant to be concealed. It wasn't meant to be seen. It was not meant to be brandished to show off your new gun. And if by chance you put it in your desk, that it had a cable lock or something like that.
So we're working through all those things, and I think we'll get somewhere.
Okay.
Anything else?
So, as long as you guys all know I carry now, and when something goes wrong here, I don't want you all running my office to for protection.
It's going to happen.
All right. Another thing we have going on, we've been back and forth. You have the paperwork on that land. There's a 6 acres of land out there.
And let me grab that file.
It was part of an estate. It was part of a three-process division. The last thing I saw that came through is that it was approved for septic systems. And so there's a long process whether or not we can do this. And so some of the things that we were on again, off again, we had legal come in and said we couldn't do it. We couldn't prove that it was a legal lot. Now it comes back up and it's been approved, recognized as a legal lot because the septic system was approved. Mm-hmm. And we have the date of that. And what we need to do, and there's a different process that we could go through, and one was unsuspected buyer. In the best interest of the county, and I think that might have been it.
Yeah, all I know is that it was maybe not a legal lot, and I've heard about it, but Peter's been working on it.
I can probably brief you, give you a more accurate description of what happened.
Okay.
This started back in the early 90s when somebody had a plan to develop a 80-acre parcel into 15 5-acre lots. A lot changed in the 90s with the passage of the GMA and zoning changed. They ended up in the 90s, as part of this plan, they went through and got preliminary septic approval. That was the public health department's feedback on that. So if they indicated a 15-lot subdivision, here's kind of a preliminary plan that they had. But what ended up happening and what they actually platted were 2 lots initially in phase one and then another 4 lots. For a six-lot total. There were some other issues that prevented developers from developing more than 6 lots because they would have to go out and acquire water rights and get a state water rights permit if they develop more than 6 at a time. So that, combined with the zoning change, put kind of a kibosh on their plan to fully develop the total of 15 lots. So they ended up with 6 developed out of the 80 acres. But what then happened is there was a 45-acre remainder lot, which the person divided into 220s and sold them off, without going through the platting process, and that left this remainder lot of 5 acres. So these got sold off to buyers. This one was retained by the person that originally did all the platting and selling, and his relatives inherited that property. then they went to sell it. And
I think they did sell it.
They did sell it.
Then they went to get a building.
Not knowing it was not a legal lot. The person bought it thinking it was a legal lot, but it has never been platted, was never created as a legally divided lot. The question now is, what remedy can we provide them? And the first one you would think of is what we call an innocent purchaser exemption to our legal lot determination process. But in this process, there are two requirements. One is a platting requirement, which this actually fits. It wasn't properly platted, but it falls into an exemption after April 19th, 1993, in the case of any segregation resulting in parcels of 5 acres or larger. So it fits that definition.
Is that county code or is that state code?
This is county code. But there's a second aspect to our county code, which requires zoning. So it either has to comply with zoning at the time it was created or the current zoning now. And because this is in an agricultural or Ag 20 district, it does not meet the current zoning or the zoning when it was actually created. So that exemption as it is currently written is not available for us to grant because of that zoning requirement. But I've looked at the other counties in the state of Washington, and the state of Washington, the RCW, in their development requirements says that the prohibitions contained in the section shall not apply to an innocent purchaser of value without actual notice. So if they purchase it innocently and they paid full price for it, which they did, the RCW say that you don't have to, you're not bound by the prohibition of granting them a building permit. A lot of the other counties from Skagit, King, Snohomish, Thurston, they all mirror the RCWs in simply stating that an innocent purchaser, you can grant them a process. They usually sign an affidavit or something to that effect saying they didn't know, and it is punishable by to sell the property or even buy it and commit fraud knowing that you purchased it that way. But their requirements do not have this zoning requirement that our county code does. So I've been further investigating with Chris and our other departments to see if it is possible for us to omit that, but it would take a modification of the county code, and that's not ready for me to submit for your approval at this time. So at this point, all I can say is that we don't have a remedy under county code to grant them legal lot status. Yeah. I can look into it further.
Except for unsuspecting buyer.
Well, this is under the innocent purchaser exception.
For the good of the county.
Well, even those, the public interest exception, those are listed under here as well.
I forgot who was talking about. Somebody was talking about the 20-acre adjoining that was also a nonconforming.
It was, because these were segregated like so, you would for for taxes, but they did not go through a platting process, but they were subsequently
they
sold.
They did not take out the permits.
Right, but because they are 20 acres or larger, there's an exemption to lots that are illegally segregated if they're 20 acres or larger. But that does not apply to this lot because it's only 5 acres.
So the bottom line on this is that the state defines a provision for a unsuspecting buyer, what you call it?
Innocent
purchaser. And our county code got written in a way that took that remedy away. And the solution would be for us to fix our code to comply with state law so we don't somehow take away what the state is intended to, the remedy that's afforded
possibly.
To by the state.
We just need to make sure before I propose that there are not other complications that we create by removing this zoning requirement to this process.
So you're doing homework on that.
I'm
working
still
with
doing
our PA's office.
If the constituent does not want to wait, it's very clear in state law and that their remedy is to go back to the seller and
well, that's where I'm coming from, is that the when the person come in to get their permit, that's when they found out that it wasn't legal. And they're the purchaser who bought it from the heir,
somebody
or trustees
inherited the
or
property,
something like
yes.
that. And then I'm not sure if that Sherry lady was part of the heir or the real estate lady that was involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. So they're to the point now that they either want their money back or they're going to sue them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the best interest of the county, in my opinion, that we should designate as a legal lot and then move forward to correct our code to be in line with state statute.
Okay.
And so that's what I would like
to do. And what I was pointing out is if you chose to grant them an exception, that would be outside of this process. It would be a unilateral decision on your part, but it wouldn't fit the exception process that we
have. I understand under the law that we have adopted that was supposed to mirror the state law, it doesn't. But I would like to move forward to change our ordinance to mirror the state law and move on this. We could make that decision today to make that a legal lot to prevent the legality and the hardship of the citizens that are involved.
My only comment is, Mr. Chairman, I have a fear that that if we start trying to tweak the process too much, that the Citizens United and these groups like that are looking to downsize all these 20-acre lots, make them smaller, and make 1,200 lots in the northeast Clark County. We need to make sure that the legal counsel, Chris and them, are on board with this thing, because I'm afraid that once we do this, then and I'm quite sure that Citizens United would end up being tickled to death to file a lawsuit against the county for giving a special exemption to one person and not to every citizen that wants to break up their property.
You heard the situation.
Right. Well, it's in your opinion. In my opinion, I think
it's legal right there.
I think
we should get an opinion from Chris as to our ability to do
that. See, the latest thing is that they came back up and they said, well, somewhere along the way, I think Chris said, we had to establish it as recognized as a legal lot. And that was done when they found that back in the 90s that it was approved for a septic system.
Yeah, but Tom, what I understand is, and look at this paper over the people I've talked to, if they would immediately taken out permits on all of those septic tanks, none of those permits were ever drawn. So actually, after a certain period of time, they went away.
No, they do a perk.
And you guys changed the law. The commissioners changed the law. You changed the rule. The state changed the rule.
We didn't.
Well, yeah, you guys did. You keep changing the rules every once in a while. You keep changing the Growth Management Act. You keep changing the rules and that. All I'm saying is that I don't want to see the county get sued again by anybody. So we need to make sure that whatever we do is legal and right. And I don't, you guys can.
Well, I think asking Chris about what kind of precedent the change would set and just get his opinion.
How long would it take us to change the ordinance?
Well,
to change it to where you could grant an exemption for that, you would have to strike this section
it originally
that's
met zoning of some kind when
that's
it was
under
divided.
The innocent purchaser exemption, it is specifically dealing with the zoning. Now, to clarify on zoning, too, another illustration for all the commissioners is here is the 5-acre parcel in question. It's in an ag zone, and because of this requirement, we cannot use this innocent purchaser exemption. But if it was this lot over here that was illegally created, and it was created in an R5 zone, because it meets the zoning requirements, you could grant that exemption right now.
Because it's not ag.
Because it's not ag. But that's how the zoning.
Well, all those other requirements are still ag also, the other 5 acres.
They are, but they were still legally created.
They were legally created way back when.
See, that's what I'm saying. The septic system was the intent that it was a legal lot in order to have the septic system approved.
Well, and again, to clarify on the septic systems, what they had done is what you typically do on a lot is you go out and do a perk test to determine what kind of septic system you're going to put in that lot.
So there was no
septic permits taken out. It was just an agreement that we had done a perk test
to determine what kind of septic system you have. You have a well thing where you have 6 wells on the land.
Huh? That's a 1990 law. That law is no longer in effect.
Well, according to Chris, there is still a six. If you do a development that's larger than 6 lots, it requires more than 6 wells. If you're the developer, you have to apply for a state water rights permit.
I have a motion. Mr. Chairman, I move that we amend that code to be consistent with the state law as soon as possible.
I think we should.
Is that a second?
If legal counsel says what we're doing is legal.
I would think if it makes it consistent with state law.
We could change our ordinance and that's legal.
Then it would. But yes, sure. We need we'll to. But anything we do, we want to make sure it's legal.
So there's something I'm puzzled with. You said that under state law, because the zoning was different, it still wouldn't match state law.
No, under the state law and the other counties don't talk about zoning. They only talk about permitting requirements or building permit requirements and say that an innocent purchaser is exempt.
So
our county code under the innocent purchaser exemption has a zoning requirement.
It has to have been a legal lot at some point, at some time. And the issue with this one is it's never been legal ever in any way or capacity.
But the state law is different.
Here's the thing here. First of all, I understand the concerns that you voiced earlier about everybody's going to sue, Clark County Citizens United and all that.
I don't care if everybody sues.
Let me finish.
I just don't want the policy started.
I understand. Let me finish. This is not that case. We're not talking about changing legal lots and anything like that. All we are doing is making our, innocent purchaser remedy consistent with state law. That's all this is doing.
So you're just expressing you want me to keep moving forward on this, and if we need a work session or something to bring forward to you a remedy?
I would not think it would need a work session. I would think you clear it with our prosecuting attorney and says if that's legal to do, we'll move it to do that. Because any time the county removes a remedy for a innocent purchaser, we've moved in the wrong direction. State law provides for a remedy for somebody, and it's evidenced by them paying full price for this lot. It wouldn't be worth full price if it was somehow not a buildable lot. So the evidence supports it, and we have been kind of overactive. Our predecessors were overactive in writing this in that removed a remedy that was provided by state law.
But David, are you saying that we have to act on it immediately without getting a legal opinion first to make sure that we're
everything
that
we do when it comes
that
to
everything is right and correct before we get involved in.
I'm not saying that at all.
We could do that, Ed, and we plan on doing that. We could do that with a phone call.
Any time we modify ordinance, which is what this is, the prosecuting attorney's office is the one who makes the changes, and they bring it forward to us, and we approve it
reject it. Well, a week ago, you guys will remember, Chris was very adamant about this property having to be sold back to the person and before anything could be done legally and another well have to file for water rights and all that. And if you guys want to do this, and I would second it if we follow through and get all the legal stuff taken care of and approved by the prosecuting attorney's office, the legal stuff, and it complies with the state law and everything else. But the minute he says no, then your motion or my motion or my second should be dumped in the garbage can.
Absolutely.
You got it.
This does not fix that lot. What this does is it fixes our ordinance to make it in compliance with state law. That's all it does.
But what else does it do in the process, David? Does it also make it to where other people that live in that same area have the opportunity to say, oh, by the way, the county made a special exemption, they changed it so they could do this, and so we're going to, and if you don't allow us to do, break up our 20-acre lots into six lots?
No,
you know,
not the same.
This is not making any special exemption. There is no exemption we're granting at all. This has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
What this does is this has served as a catalyst for us to identify an area where our county code, in a blanket way, has removed a remedy that has been provided by state law in a case. So this doesn't fix the case. This just fixes our code.
I know that Marty, on more than one occasion, or probably a different situation, identified things as an unsuspecting buyer.
Yeah.
I've worked on a lot of innocent purchaser cases, yeah. And some of them, you know, you really sympathize with people. I think the important thing here is to research the change that Peter's talking about. Mm-hmm. Get Chris's opinion, because as everything we do has a bow wave, and we just got to look at what precedent sets. We live in a buyer beware state, so there are lots of illegal or non-conforming lots all over the county, and we want to make sure that not just anybody can walk through the door and say, "I didn't know." You know, so that's what we have to look at.
Okay.
So we'll
come back with a recommendation.
The second includes the blessing of the prosecuting attorney's office, as it always is with all ordinance changes. So it's okay. It does. We never have gone against their own counsel.
Okay.
Is that a second?
I told you I would second it, but
we need an opinion.
What we're doing here is setting a direction that says if it is a legal option in the opinion of our prosecuting attorney's office, this is the direction we will go.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, but I do have a problem with what Axel brought up about all these other folks out there and not being agreed. To be able to give them, I'm not willing to give one person something and not allow the other people to have the same thing.
This would allow anybody who would fall under state law to qualify for it. Under state law.
Jennifer's want to know if she's going to get a second in the minutes to an action.
I told you I'd second it.
Okay. Well, that's a second.
And just to clarify as well, if we only remove the zoning, as you want me to pursue, the platting requirement still
the same.
It still only applies to lots after 1993 that are 5 acres or larger. So if there's a lot that was created that's a 1 acre lot out there, we're not talking about those, or even 2.5 acre lots.
It would be just simply when you looked at the other ordinances from the other counties that are consistent with the RCW, and the details of that could be worked out with our prosecuting attorney's office to fulfill the intent of that remedy that was provided. So all of those details can still be worked out. Okay. This does not grant any exception to anybody. It just simply makes our code align with RCW. So all in favor?
Yep. We're aye.
Aye. Okay. Good. Thank you.
That'll be good. Okay. That's all I have.
A couple of things. I'll do staff reports. I gave you this in a packet. This is the EMS District 2 staff report from Doug Smith Lee. It's just informational for this week. He's going to come back in and give you a better report.
That's good.
You guys have kind of tasked me with working on CRESA issues, the ambulance contract, the radio contract for you. This is part of the ambulance work.
I got an email that he sent out.
Yep.
That it was this. There was a problem.
No.
It said something about we had to come back to the drawing board. I took it that he had a problem with the other half of the contract.
No. No, we've been working pretty well, actually really well, with the city on the interlocal agreement. What this is this is actually kind of a quirky thing. You three gentlemen are the Board of Clark County Commissioners and the EMS District 2 Board. So really this is kind of a bit of a silly document for you, because you've already tasked me as well as CRESA, Doug Smith Lee, and the rest, Taylor Halvick, as your attorney, to work on the ILA as both, obviously, representatives of the county and the EMS 2 district. This needs to be signed off on by the rest of our district partners. So the district partners agree to be represented by you in EMS District 2 and grant you their authority to work on this ILA.
And those partners are?
All the rest of the cities. And so
the city of Vancouver said they wanted...
Not the city of Vancouver. EMS District 2 is everybody
that
else.
That helps. Okay.
Right. So anyhow, this is going out to them. They're going to sign it and say we're comfortable with where we are in our partnership on the ambulance ILA. Go forward on our behalf and work on it. And we will need to eventually sign this too. But Doug Smith Lee is going to come talk to you about it.
Okay.
You guys did a good job.
It's a work in progress, but it's going well. And the other thing I had. Just personally, you're going to miss me on a couple of Thursdays this month, and maybe the first one next month. I'm doing the Mark. Let me do the building.
Pretty sure yourself about that?
Well, you may not miss me. The office might. Some might. I don't know. But I'm doing the building blocks of supervision thing through HR, and so that's got me committed for a few Thursdays coming up. Our HR department, they were doing it in partnership with the city. I think we're just doing it on our own now, but they kind of take, I guess, people like me, middle-level folks, in this class, which is called Building Blocks of Supervision, and I think there's about 17 of us in it, and we do a number of days on different areas of learning to be a good supervisor, a good manager, a leader, and so there's different kind of modules, and we got some homework that we have to do, but we show up on Thursday and learn. So tomorrow, I think we've got Heath Henderson. There's a couple of train the trainer people who have already gone through it and then learned to teach. And so Christina Monks is doing a good job of leading it, but she brings in other partners from outside and inside the county to kind of lead and teach it.
I would love to hear more about it as you go through it.
Okay. I'll give you an update. Yeah. That's all I had, Peter. You got
have it all?
Covered it up, everything I have.
Holly, you have anything?
What was the vacancy review?
Oh, we'll come to ramp back around to that. Did you have anything, Holly? We did have one kind of late, quick vacancy review. I talked to Dr. Melnick before we stepped in here. You'll see by the date that this was kind of requested, like I said, late yesterday. But what he's trying to do is they just went out for a recruiting process for an OA2 over there, Office Assistant 2. They had, I understand, a good pool. They had some great interviews. They did make an offer, but they had another one come open just this week, I guess, or very recent. So he called and said, hey, can I get this in front of the board on a relatively quick turn, because we want to utilize that process. We don't want to go through the process again. We had some great candidates and some folks that we may want to talk to about this other opening. And so
we actually already authorized that one for him.
Well, right. This is the second one that just came open.
In other words, they had more than one good candidate, and they got an opening, and they want the green light. And I'm good with that. Dr. Melnick's
new opening.
Yeah.
New position.
Yeah. Well, I guess this person's set to leave here in a few days.
Current budget.
Yeah, it should be budget neutral. Or continuing. Fill a vacancy. So
okay.
All right.
So consensus, we're all good with that. First, second.
Great.
We don't have that one before us.
Yeah, it should be there. I got it right here.
I have it.
I have that one over here already.
Okay.
No, I don't have that one.
Are we done?
Really awesome.
That's all we have.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're adjourned. We're done. We are adjourned.